Welcome to Ask Wynn, everyone. Now, I got this guest today because I'm always checking my email, let's be honest. And this guest reached out to me about coming on my podcast, which you guys are all welcome to do instead of me hunting you down. That makes it easy on both of us. And if you hear this guest speak and you say that she has a strange accent, that is because she's from the UK. So trust me, I don't mind the strange accent, but you guys might. So I have to put a pre-warning on that, that if you hear Gina speak, she is from the UK, but she's here today to speak about her book, and we're just going to sing small and see how it goes. So I'm going to let Miss Gina take it away.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me to be part of your show. I'm really thrilled to be here. And although I'm in the UK, the work that I'm doing, I am at the moment working on a huge mission to impact positively on 1 million people in the next 5 years. And to do that, I need to reach out to people in the US, Canada, and around the English-speaking world. So thank you very much indeed. I'm really pleased to be here.
You are so welcome.
Thank you. My latest book, The Thriving Not Surviving, The Five Secret Pathways to Happiness, Success, and Fulfillment, and I'm really thrilled to tell you it's my second bestseller. I'm absolutely thrilled to it. And sets out a little bit of my story and the principles and strategies that I've used myself and used with thousands of people now to help them feel more confident and to live a more successful, happier, and more fulfilling life. And one of the things that I'm passionate about is empowering people, helping people to recognize that they're not broken and that they, if they step into being authentically, genuinely who they are meant to be, that their potential can be realized and that they can have it all.
Well, my God, that sounds like the mission I am trying to be on. You and I are both trying to inspire the world.
Yes.
So basically, it's your second best-selling book. And do you have any secrets for new and upcoming authors to get to the best-selling list or no? It takes luck and a lot of marketing, doesn't it?
I think first and foremost is you've got to have something you want to say. And a lot of people, I think, have a book in them. They've got either an experience, and I learned to walk twice as an adult. And when I ran a school, I was the principal of a large school for over 20 years. And I ran that school mainly from a wheelchair. And one of the gifts of that disability was that I developed a very different approach to leadership. And that was about getting people to take responsibility for their own performance and to recognize in the context of the school what excellence looked like in every way. That it was successful can be shown by the fact that we were on the best 100 schools in England list twice while I was ahead. Now, for me, that was my why. I wanted to share with people the principles and strategies which had not only been successful in the school, but since I left headship in 2004, I've used it with individuals, couples, teams, and whole organizations. So I know this stuff works. And so for me, my why, the reason I wanted to write a book, was because I wanted to share that message. So once you've got your why, and if you're really passionate about what you want to write about, and if you're not passionate about it, then take up knitting or go and do something that you are passionate about.
Yes, I was going to say. Don't write a book and be passionate about it.
Because ultimately, if you want other people to engage with you, you've got to be really passionate and enthusiastic about what it is you're offering. I've worked with a number of people who wanted to write a book but have been overwhelmed by it. And one of the I've written five books now, and the way I've written them all is to create a structure, a skeleton, if you like, of what I wanted to get across. And initially, in draft form, what order I felt would be most effective. Very often that's changed as I've written the book. But having written the skeleton, what I've done is I've created a folder with a plastic bag filer thing for each chapter. And within that, I've created subsections for each of the little sections. And once I've got that, it's not so overwhelming, because then I put ideas and quotes and things that I want into each bag. So when I've got half an hour or an hour, I can pick up the bag and I can work on a section. And it's the difference between trying to eat a cow in one sitting and enjoying a meal mouthful by mouthful. So it's knowing your why and being passionate about it, and then breaking it down into its very structured points, so that you have a journey. What's the journey that you want the people who are reading your book to share with you? What is it you want them to get out of it? So creating a very brief storyboard, and then you can start to fill in the gaps. And I would say to people that the writing the book is easy, but then it's the refining the book and getting it ready for publication, which becomes, it's
definitely agree. The first draft is easy as Carter has told, but I have decided I'm a journalist that hates to edit. I'm a journalist who teaches on the side. Gina, I don't know if you know that, but now you do.
I didn't yes.
I'm a journalist who hates to edit. Hates to edit. I'm like, oh, editing my work is like the nemesis of me. So, okay. So you have to write the book with passion, of course you do. Don't write a book if you're not passionate about it, because if you're self-published, like Gina and I are, thank you very much, and even with a publishing deal like I have right now, they expect you to do half of the marketing. They will do some of the marketing, but they have a ton of books they need to work on, so they can do all the marketing on your books. So essentially, you're picking up another job.
Yes. And I would say, at a personal level, for me, that's much harder than the writing the book, because my natural bent is not sales and marketing. My natural bent is actually to work with people and to help them. And so I've been out of my comfort zone quite a lot in order to get the message out there. And if you were half-hearted about wanting to share your message, there's no way that you're going to put in the time and effort that's required to get it out there.
I completely agree. And that's I'm very lucky that I did a couple of anthologies with other authors, but I also got into the self-publishing industry. Now I'm stepping out of the self-publishing industry and going on to bigger and better things with my books, thank God. Because Amazon is a little bit murky in the way they do things. But when I got into the self-publishing field, I was very lucky, because not only did my friends, my family, my colleagues buy my book, complete strangers bought my book, and it hit number one. So I'm very lucky that I hit number one on my own with my first original book, and my autobiography, I Come a Win, sells extremely well to this day.
Yes. Well, I do believe that if you've got something worth saying and you set the intention that, you know, it's going to get out there, and that you're prepared to, to back it up by action, then you should do well. And I completely self-published my first couple of books, really to become the calling card, my credibility, when I moved from the world of education into the business world. And Kickstart Your Career is for people who are leaving education, and it's how to be a professional grown-up quickly. And then the other is managing your staff more effectively. And that's a distillation of all of the lessons and the strategies that we use to grow leadership within my school. And I did that all self-publishing. Now I use an organisation called Evolve Publishing, and it's a sort of halfway house, and that's been very, very helpful. And they've done all the technical stuff and stuff that actually is not my thing. And it's much better for somebody who knows what they're doing to do it. But these days going into... Sorry, I interrupted you. Do go ahead.
Go ahead. No. I was just going to say that's why I'm going with a halfway house publisher too, Gladiator Publishing in the U.S., but they do accept international authors because I'm not good at technical side. I'm not good at technical.
And I think part of this is about, knowing when it's worth investing the time to learn a completely new skill and when it's better to hand that over to somebody else and do the things that not only are you good at but that you're interested in. And because I don't publish a book every now and then, but it's not something that I'm doing every day, to have somebody who knows what they're doing seems to me to make perfect sense. And I'd say if you're out there and you're writing a book, then reach out to people who have already written a book. And then there's a fabulous bit of software that Evolve Publishing have created. It's not very expensive, which you can write in.
The host has joined the conference.
It paginates everything as you write. So if you change something, it automatically repaginates everything. My first couple of books, I spent months getting the pages right, and then I'd alter something, and then you'd have to go all the way through and rechange it. So there are tools that can help you to do it more easily.
Yeah, and I don't know what happened, you guys, with technology. Thank you very much. Technology kind of played a game on Gina and I. And so what we were saying is that even though with self-publishing, we're using small publishers now because we're not good at the technical side. We're good at education. I'm actually better at journalism than I ever was at education. I admit that publicly on podcasts, and my colleagues listen to this podcast. So sorry about that, you guys that do listen. And I know they do because they told me about this podcast. So I am a much better journalist than I am educator, but that's why I'm leaving the education field, because I don't know about Gina's feelings, but in education you get a small paycheck, and that's why I'm leaving the education field in 2 years, because I want a bigger paycheck off my books than I do in education. And so I want to hear from Gina about her disabilities and how she ran a school basically from a wheelchair. That is amazing. I have a wheelchair, but I never show up at work in it. Actually, that's not true. I showed up the first year completely in my wheelchair, and people thought that was amazing that I was walking at the time when I got out of the wheelchair. But my campus is not handicapped accessible, so I hope that they made your campus a little bit easier, Gina, when you were running the school completely out of a wheelchair.
They did. I have to say, I really fought against going into a wheelchair. And the story is that I became a deputy head or deputy principal very early. I was 29, and I became the deputy principal of a large junior high school. And in that first February, I started in the September before, I went off skiing. And I'd been given a pair of new skis for Christmas. And in those days, the style was to go for the longest skis possible. Things have changed a bit now. And I started to wrap those skis around my neck with monotonous regularity during the week. And I had quite a bad fall on the Thursday. I was an experienced skier, but the new skis were something that I was struggling to get to grips with. So on the Friday morning, which was the last day before we left, I took myself off in the morning to just get my confidence back on some simple runs. And I met my friends at lunchtime, and they said to me that they'd found a fabulous new run. This is in St. Anton in Austria. And so I joined them, and off we went, and it was one of those beautiful days, very, very sunny, very hot. And we got to the top of the ski lift, and I followed them, and we went round the corner, and I realised that something was very badly wrong, because we were at the top of the Schindlergratz, which is the most difficult black run in St. Anton, very long, very steep, and full of moguls. And for those people who live in a ski area, I would think most people know that, you know, there's mogul where the snow is being carved out by the weather. And moguls can be a couple of inches, or they can be several feet tall. And there was a mogul field,
yep.
And moguls are about 6 foot tall. So I skied the first third and managed, because I'd skied black runs before, but this was a monster. Anyway, I fell... and it took me a long time to get to where my friends were sitting. And they were all sitting on a different mogul, rather like elves sitting on mushrooms. And I took my skis off and I was sitting on a mogul, and the heat meant that the mogul gave way. And I'm told I fell about 150, 200 feet down the mountain. I knocked myself out, but when they finally did get to me, I was determined that I was going to make my own way down the last part, and I'd fallen a long way, so there wasn't much of the black run left to go. I struggled home the next day, and my mum took one look at me, and she marched me off to the emergency department of the local hospital, who said that I got a bad concussion and that I had trapped a nerve in my neck. And it took me a few weeks to get over that, but I was due to be the deputy leader of the borough ski party. We had 150 school pupils going skiing. And I was given the okay to go, although I'd still got some tingling in my hand. But we've got a doctor coming with us, and I was told I could go. On the last day of that week, I was pretty spent, and I went to lie on my bed, and I found that I was paralysed down one side. I didn't want to make a fuss and frighten the children. And when finally somebody came, all hell broke loose, and I was carted off to the local hospital. Now, it took me a while to get back to school. And to start with, I managed, but with difficulty. And it got to the summer holidays, and I was really pleased to get to the summer holidays. But 3 weeks later, I got a phone call at 8 o'clock in the morning to say that my principal had died. And I was suddenly the head. I was the acting head for a term, and then I became the official head that January. And for 5 years, they were looking for a reason why my mobility was deteriorating and why I had such a great level of fatigue. And I did school and not a lot else, but I wouldn't use a wheelchair. My school site was very spread out. So my personal life got smaller and smaller as I did school and nothing else. And it came to a head in the summer holidays when I went to a beautiful gardens, the Royal Gardens at Wisley, and I managed to get to the kiosk, but I couldn't walk any further and I wouldn't use one of the wheelchairs that was on hire. And it was all about worrying, what would people think, would they think less of me? Anyway, events took a turn for the worse, and I ended up in hospital for 4 months, the next day, in fact. And when I came out, I had to use a wheelchair. And so I arrived in school, and very soon after coming out of hospital, I was determined to get back to school. And I needn't have worried. Nobody batted an eyelid. The children certainly didn't. If parents said anything, they were saying it at the school gate and not to me. The local authority were very helpful. And so I started to use a wheelchair, but at that time I didn't use it in the classrooms or in my office. But a couple of years later, on the last day of term, I found that I couldn't stand, and I had burst a disc in my back. And when they removed it, I found that I couldn't put my foot to the floor, my left foot to the floor, without fainting. I've got a failed back surgery syndrome, so I had to use a wheelchair all the time. It took me 2 years to walk to the bottom of my very small garden. And then, again, first day of the summer holidays, about 4 months after I managed to get to the bottom of the garden, I was sick. I ruptured another disc, and this time I couldn't walk at all. 5 days after coming out of hospital, I was back at school. Why? Because at home, I was totally disabled. I couldn't make a cup of tea or coffee if somebody hadn't left one out for me. But at school, I could use my mouth, my brain, my hands and my eyes, and there were people there to help. It was 5 months later, I think, that the consultant said, we might think about you going back a couple of hours a week. And I just laughed. And I was completely in a wheelchair from 1998 until 2004, when I had an internal spinal stimulator fitted. And progress was very slow, but now I don't use a wheelchair in the house or the garden, and I can walk short distances, but if I go into town or I need to go, you know, if I go on holiday or if I'm going anything other than, you know, 100 or so yards, then I have to use my wheelchair. But my wheelchair has become my chariot on fire, my enabler. It has facilitated my capacity.
I love you. I love the attitude, Gina. I love it because I'm listening to your story, and that sounds similar to mine, even though I didn't fall as I skied down hills, but that's my biggest fear. And yes, my biggest fear is falling and injuring my back even more. And but when I woke up from my spinal fusion gone hobbling wrong, they gave me propofol and fusion syndrome, which means it's basically what Michael Jackson died of. He took propofol without supervision, and propofol is an anesthesia, and so he died of propofol and fusion syndrome, and I'm the youngest person to survive propofol and fusion syndrome. I almost got written up in the medical journal because of it. Yep. That's fun, fun, fun. And then, Jesus, oh, good grief, I, isn't that fun? No. And so, and then they left my spine. They, let my spine go dead for 20 minutes. And I know I was hooked up to electrodes, and someone wasn't paying attention to what they were doing. I can't figure out who to this day, 11 years later, I can't figure out who wasn't paying attention. And so they let my spine go dead for 20 minutes, which basically I was paralyzed for 20 minutes. And then on top of it, all these guys tell me that I had nerve damage in my right leg. I quickly discovered that one as I was walking down a marble terrazzo staircase, holding on to the railing at my grandmother's house on the East Coast. I'm like, why won't my leg bend? And it still won't. It's getting better, but it still won't bend completely to this day. And then I go back to the doctor for my 6 months checkup, and I tell them this, oh, and they say, oh, that may be because we let your spine go dead for 20 minutes. I'm like, I look at them, and I'm like, you guys should have told me or should have told my parents. I'm like,
goodness,
medical
me.
Malpractice, big time.
You would have thought
good
so.
Grief.
Yeah.
What?
Well, it beggars belief.
Yeah.
I was told after the first operation by my surgeon, the operation was a complete success, my dear. It's you who are the failure.
You just.
But I have to say, the second surgeon was wonderful.
That
person. Very supportive and lovely.
You probably just wanted to smack that surgeon.
I'm not a violent person. Probably just as well. Yeah.
You probably just wanted to use what you used to use on the kids to get them to be quiet. You probably just wanted to say, I want to smack you, but wait a couple, please. And you had to keep your mouth shut. And
incidentally, when I took over his head, I inherited a great big bunch of canes, which had been hitherto used to smack the children. I used them to support tomatoes in the school garden.
canes go out there to support the tomatoes in the school, tomatoes in the school garden, and And so, Gina, before I let you go, I want you to ask me about anything, about writing books, about cerebral palsy, about anything.
Well, I'm fascinated how you transitioned from being a journalist to being an author, if indeed I've got it right that it was that way round.
Well, it's the other way around. I'm transitioning out of education because, as you know, education is not the easiest job in the world, especially when you have a disability on top of it. No. And thank you very much. But let's be honest. And so I am transferring my skills to providing to journalism, and I'll still keep my books up on the side of my journalism degree, and I hope to, and I should say I hope because I will quit my educational job in the next 2 years and then, be financially free of that small kitten's paycheck, and then I will be a full-time journalist.
Brilliant. And what sort of journalism?
Well, right now I am getting a degree in fashion journalism, and I'm 30% done with my degree. I'll be 35% done by August 15th. And so I want to focus on not only fashion journalism, which my degree is in, but I want to focus helping the disabled expand their horizons on what they can do to make themselves look better and feel better.
Yeah. Can I share a story with you? Because for me it was pivotal.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'd left headship, so I'd had nearly 21 years as a principal. And I left headship because my health was deteriorating. And one of the things I wanted to do was I wanted to study neurolinguistic programming, NLP. Once I'd done all of my qualifications, I'm a master practitioner and I'd done NLP coaching, I went to look at as many people who were doing NLP as possible. And I went to see Anthony Robbins, which many of your listeners will be familiar with. And I went to the Excel Centre in London. There were 10,000 people on the course. And one of the things within the course was to do the fire walk, which is to walk over hot coals with no shoes on, which sounds bad, but if you're in the right headspace, you can do it with absolutely no problem. You don't burn your tootsies. Now, at the beginning of the day, he talked about a course he was running in California, which I'd completely dismissed because at that time I was in a manual wheelchair, which I couldn't propel very well because I have very little upper body strength. And I just dismissed it as that's not possible. In the evening, we did the firewalk, and I was given some help, that person supporting me either side, and I was absolutely thrilled to have done the firewalk. I sat down back in my wheelchair, and as I looked, the next person to me was a double amputee. Both legs were amputated below, just below the knee. He tipped himself onto his hands, and he walked over the hot coals on his hands. And in that moment, I thought, do you know what? If he can do that, how much am I self-limiting? I'm going to go on that course. So I went home, and I booked my flight, I ordered the tickets, and since then I've been to the States many times. In fact, I've just come back from creating a 13-part TV series, and I am so thankful to that man, because although I went and I worked for the government all over the country and I ran my school, I was still self-limiting. And for me, disability is a metaphor for life, and in many ways, I'm less disabled than those people who believe that they aren't good enough, that they aren't clever, pretty, rich enough, because I can get in my wheelchair and wheel away. They carry that dissing of their ability with them. But I would say to you know, for your listeners, whether you're able-bodied or you're differently abled rather than disabled, ultimately it's about what you believe about yourself, whether you believe you can or whether you believe you can't. If you believe that you'll fail, it's a done deal. But if you believe you can, then it's about finding a way to make it happen, because that belief will sustain you through the probably several times where it doesn't work and that you fail and that you learn to do something different. But if you believe in yourself, then so many possibilities are open to you. But if you don't believe in yourself, it's like knocking on a locked door.
Yeah. And I hope that my, now this I do hope, I hope that my campus is a lot handicapped friendly.
Could you repeat that? I didn't quite catch. Sorry, Wynne, I didn't quite catch what you said. Could you repeat that for me? The line flicked.
I would.
Hello?
They'll be doing my office. But my office, the last time I was in there, was sat in a 10-year-old building. So it needed TLC anyway, 10, 11 care anyway. But one of the things I did before I left is made my principal walk down a very steep ramp from his office to the car park to the parking lot, for those of you who just didn't understand what I just said. Dana got it, but you guys didn't get it. But so I am hopeful that my office is a lot more handicapped and accessible, because that would make me a happy person in education. But I am very hopeful that I know I can make it as a journalist. I know I can make it as a published author. But that's my next career pivot. And as you guys know, I'll be speaking about that as it gets closer, and we'll see what happens. But, Gina, I truly appreciate you coming on this podcast, and I truly appreciate you guys reaching out to me. And where can the people find you if they want to find out more about your incredible story? And
they can go onto the website, which is www.genuinely-you.com. So it's www.genuinely-you.com. And if you go onto the website, your listeners can download a free digital copy of Thriving Not Surviving, the 5 secret pathways to happiness, success, and fulfillment. And I'd be really grateful if they could share that. Or join me in the Genuinely You Facebook group. You can find me on Facebook, but join the group or request to join the Genuinely You Facebook group. And you'll find lots of resources on the website or on the Facebook group. And that's genuinely-you.com or Genuinely You Facebook.
Well, Gina, I truly appreciate your time and your stories, and I apologize for the little confusion, mainly on LinkedIn. I mean, LinkedIn didn't get half of what I was saying when I booked this podcast with you, Missy, so I'm happy that we got it all figured out. If you guys
would
have seen behind the scenes of Ask Women scheduling, it's like, really? LinkedIn, you're really not getting it, or your scheduler didn't get it, and automatic scheduler didn't get it, and I'm like, really? Yes, she reached out to me, she put my contact name, I booked an appointment with her, and I am so happy we got it all figured out. And you guys, this episode, by the time you guys hear this, it will be up on Wednesday, and I am actually in the process. I gave up my bike to my assistant, Danielle Coulter. You guys know that I was giving up my bike because it was too complex, but now I'm in the process of getting an e-bike, believe it or not, and I never thought I would have an e-bike in my life, but I don't have a bike right now, and the e-bike is the next greatest technology, and so I'm in the process of getting an e-bike, and it's taking a little bit more time than I thought, but I don't care if I have to wait for this e-bike because it's going to be worth it in the end. So that's the update on that. So I just wanted to give you guys an update on my bike situation. My bike situation is fine. It's getting even better. And yes, Gina, I'm getting an e-bike. And I don't know if you guys have access to e-bikes in the UK, but the new technology, and I'm going to be one of the first with a disability to have an e-bike, and I'm super excited.
Sounds incredible. No, I've never heard of them. I'll have to look it up and see what
electronic bike.
About them.
No, you can Google electronic bikes. They're the latest and greatest thing. But anyway, you guys, I appreciate you guys supporting this podcast, and you guys can go support via Patreon, Ask Gwen, or you can support via PayPal, that is also askgwen@gmail.com, or you can find me on Twitter at winkellycharles.com, Win, W-I-N, Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, Charles, C-H-A-R-L-E-S, and of course the at symbol, or you can listen to the podcast in your favorite podcasting app, and I truly appreciate Gina coming on and sharing this story, and I hope you guys gained wisdom from Gina, and I wish you guys a very successful day, and I will be back with more fabulous interviews, and we'll just keep the Ask Win train going, and I appreciate the time, and I appreciate you believing in me and believing in this podcast. Thanks, you guys. Bye.
Bye-bye, and thank you very much for having me on your show. You take care. Thank you.